Federal contractors probably don't operate workplaces as depicted on the TV show Mad Men. But just to make sure, the Labor Department has finalized rules governing sex discrimination. They update rules for the first time since 1970. For details and what they mean in a practical sense, we turn to Kenneth Rosenberg, a partner at the law firm Fox & Rothschild. Ken, good to have you back.
Good morning, Tom. It's great to be back.
These new rules are final as of when?
August 15th, 2016, they become effective, and that's when contractors need to make sure that their policies and procedures are up to date.
And what's new versus 1970?
A lot has changed, obviously, over the last 46 years or so since the last time that the OFCCP's guidelines on sex discrimination were issued. There's been numerous changes in general employment law under Title VII principles and so forth that were not reflected in the OFCCP's guidelines, and that was the reason that they went forward and issued new guidelines to bring them up to date with the current state of the law. Some examples, or probably the most basic premise, is that previously, under the old guidelines, which focused primarily on discriminatory practices based on one's sex or gender, it was as basic as if you had policies or procedures that intentionally discriminated against an individual because of their gender or their sex, then that was deemed, obviously, a violation of law and the guidelines. However, the law has changed substantially since then to broaden the definition of sex to include things such as if an individual is pregnant, you can't take discriminatory actions against them because of that, or if there were any medically related issues relating to their pregnancy, you can't discriminate against those individuals now. Also, the law has evolved where it now protects individuals based on gender identity and sexual orientation, for example. So there's been a whole host of new developments in the law in general that were not reflected in the guidelines, and that's why the OFCCP deemed it appropriate to move ahead and reissue the guidelines so that they reflect the current status of the law.
If these statutes do exist and they are the law of the land, why are the rules needed? Because wouldn't contractors be following the law in the first place?
That's a great point. Most federal contractors are already governed by Title VII, and the implications of Title VII and the changes in both statutory and case law that have developed over the past 46 years. But the OFCCP, having these guidelines already out there and on their website and in the public arena, deemed it appropriate to ensure that their regulations were up to date, and that was the basis for moving ahead and revising them. Government moves a little bit slower than sometimes even the courts do, or even Congress does. And so in this case, they were just trying to catch up to what the general requirements under law are. And that's the reason that they issued the guidelines, also to provide an unequivocal basis if they conduct an audit to reference back to in the event that they find that a contractor is not, its policies and procedures are not up to date with the current status of the law, they could point to the guidelines and say, look, you should be on notice that we are expecting all federal contractors to be following these guidelines.
And what about the commercial world? Are there Labor Department guidelines already in place over there?
Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has also issued general guidelines and guidance to private employers and public employers, requiring them to, and setting forth what the general framework that employers have to follow to be in compliance with Title VII and so forth. So there is certainly sufficient guidance out there for employers to turn to determine what their obligations are. This, again, was directed at federal contractors because that's the OFCCP's jurisdiction.
We're speaking with Ken Rosenberg. He's a partner at the law firm Fox Rothschild, and our topic is the new Labor Department guidelines for federal contractors on sex discrimination. So as a practical matter, what does the average contractor need to do now to be compliant by August?
That's a great question. First steps that they should take is examine their existing policies and procedures, ensure that their equal employment opportunity policy has been updated to include and protect categories, including individuals based on sexual orientation and gender identity, as well as examine the job titles that they're using. And the OFCCP placed set forth a number of tips and guidelines that federal contractors can follow. And among those include looking at their job titles and determining if they're gender-specific to make them gender-neutral. So, for example, instead of using the terms such as foreman or lineman, making those gender-neutral so that it says foreperson, line person. It's a simple change, but something that they deem appropriate. They are also recommending that federal contractors designate single-user restrooms and changing rooms so that either sex has the ability to use those single-user restrooms and so that they're neutral. They're also recommending that contractors ensure that their accommodation, light duty, modified job duty, or assignments are equally applied to both genders, regardless of gender, both males and females.
And just on that point about the restrooms and changing rooms, if a construction company now has, say, a locker room or something, it doesn't have to be multiple gender, but they have to have something like almost the equivalent of a family bathroom, if you will.
That's exactly correct. They don't have to go out and actually create that, but if they have it, if they have a family-type restroom or single user restroom, then it needs to be neutral. So it can't be designated for just a male or female.
And on that issue of gender identity, which is different from, say, transgender, where someone has become the other gender, that seems to be a very fluid area these days out in the social sphere. And it sounds like something that, as a company, you'd have to stay on top of what the latest thinking is and what gender identity is all about.
That's correct. It's a very hot topic. And essentially, the government saying that if an individual identifies themselves as being male, even if they were born as a female, that the contractor, the employer, has to not discriminate against that individual based on that person's identification with that gender. And so let's take a good example of how this could evolve or occur in the workplace. If, for example, a contractor has and health insurance policy, and an individual who identifies themselves as male but actually is anatomically female develops ovarian cancer, the employer's health insurance policy would be deemed discriminatory if it denied that individual cancer treatment for the ovarian cancer based on the fact that the individual identifies themselves as male. So that would be one example of a gender identity discriminatory practice that would have to be discontinued.
All right, so there's some work to do then, really, that contractors have to do. And does the Labor Department, are they likely to take a look at policies and procedures on a spot check type basis?
In the event that there is an OFCCP audit that a federal contractor is subjected to, they are certainly going to examine the federal contractor's policies and procedures to ensure that they are non-discriminatory based on sex, which includes all the topics that we just reviewed.
Kenneth Rosenberg is a partner with the law firm Fox Rothschild. Thanks so much for giving us an update on that.
My pleasure.
And you can share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends.